The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And during my month-long trip to Sydney and Tasmania and New Zealand, got to try so many great wines and got to meet a lot of really fascinating, interesting, impressive people. One of them is Rosie Neudorf, who is technically director of sales and marketing, but she says she prefers international cheerleader. She's joining us now from Neudorf Vineyard. Rosie, good morning to you. Good afternoon for me. First, thank you so much for being on the pod.
Oh, kia ora. Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to join you. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, yeah. And what would you like your title for this to be?
I think, international cheerleader works. That's just fine. We'll go with that.
What's the longest flight you've ever had to take to help talk about and sell and just raise the awareness of Neudorf? Like, what's the longest, toughest travel you've had to do?
Europe's been a long-standing market for us, so we've worked in Europe for a very long time. So that trip is, I think, one of the furthest you can do globally anyway. The longest individual flight would have been Auckland to Dubai, which I think is about 17 and a half hours on my way to the UK. So you land for a couple of hours and then you've got another 8 hours ahead of you. But the quickest, longest trip would be, I had to go up to London for an event, quite a specific event, but it was in a really busy time. So I flew from Upper Motiri to London for about 4 days and I flew home again. So I think the whole trip was about a week and it was a long way to go.
So I like to try to at least think of one question you haven't been asked before, because you've been in other interviews, other podcasts and things like that. Your mm-hmm. vineyard is very well known and damn good. I've had Todd Stevens on in the past. What advice would you give to people that are about to go on a long plane, a long flight? What is your air travel tips for people?
You never need as much things in your hand luggage as you think you need. You're not actually going to do all of the inter-row exercises. So just one set of like comfortable clothing. Don't have too many Bloody Marys on the first leg. That'd be another good one. Just two Bloody Marys, enough to put you into a light doze.
That's good advice, because you think, oh, I'm good. It seems like a good idea to have that third drink. And then 45 minutes after the third drink, you realize not so much.
Yeah. And also, like, I think you have, you know, for me, I have a full-time job and a child. And so life back here is pretty busy. And then suddenly you're like, oh my gosh, nobody needs me for 17 hours. I'm a free agent. But like sitting there three Bloody Marys deep is kind of like, okay, now what, now what, now what? So, yeah, I think probably two Bloody Marys and comfortable clothes. That's my ideal travel trip.
Perfect. All right. Well, let's start from the beginning. I was wondering if you could just sort of give people a general outline of the history of Neudorf.
Yeah, absolutely. We started very early days. In fact, we've just finished harvest on our 45th vintage, which is pretty amazing, really, particularly in New Zealand. My parents were sort of from the back to the land movement of the late 60s, early 70s. And my dad had a background in agricultural science and got introduced to the wine industry that was starting to flirt with the idea of coming to New Zealand. So dad, I guess he fell in love with the wine industry, which is fantastic for me because I would have been a very bad dairy farmer. So I'm grateful that he chose wine. They found a piece of land at the top of the South Island. We're about 45 minutes northwest of Nelson. He was very adamant he wanted to be able to dry farm. And so he was looking for a soil type that would be able to hold enough moisture. And we're sitting here on a beautiful ancient gravelly clay system, gentle north-facing slopes. And the vineyard was, or the piece of land they bought was just the right size, really. They want to overcook the goose too quickly. So that was 1978. They first started planting Neudorf, and then they did their first vintage in 1981. They went on, they sort of started with a collection of varietals that you could get your hands on, bearing in mind that the industry was so young in New Zealand, there was very limited resource. So that bit of trial and error, but Chardonnay was in the first trial and is the wine that we've made every year ever since. Pinot joined the fold not too long after, as did Riesling, and then later down the track, Pinot Gris, and most recently, Albarino. My father was obsessed with climate change. And so that sort of dictates a lot of decisions that we continue to make today. The wineries run on solar power. Our blocks are all certified organic. We hand harvest our Chardonnays and Pinots. I think, yeah, it's quite nice. That's like a pillar of the company. It makes decision making a little bit easier because that's an absolute, yeah, I guess a non-negotiable when it comes to a lot of decisions. Today, Todd Stevens, who you've had on the show, our general manager and exceptional winemaker, who's very much part of the family. We're very lucky to have Todd. He's been here about 13, 14 years now. And we have a small team of about 10 full-time people. My mum still lives on site. My father passed away towards the end of last year. And so we're learning a new style of life. We're very lucky. My mum is involved as much as she wants to be, really. And she also has my son when not probably as a trade for me attempting to help run the business. She gets to look after Freddie. So we've got it's a cool team. It's an amazing part of the world. We're very, very lucky.
And it does feel like a family. Like Todd Stevens feels like a favorite uncle. And when we were there visiting, it was cool seeing your mom just swooping around, chatting with some customers that had been longtime fans of Neudorf. Like that was like really nice, just how much your mom is still involved and how much her presence can still be felt there.
Oh, absolutely. And I think even Dad's presence, to be honest, there's a lot of times that we find this bizarre irrigation join that Dad put in 1978 and go, why was this not on a map? we miss you, but my goodness. Yeah, no, Todd definitely, he's got a big brother air about him. And we're very proud to have him, very lucky to have him. And I think he really enjoys being here. So I hope it's a win-win for everybody.
45 vintages. It feels like I don't know if you don't have the numbers, it's fine. What the average winery in New Zealand, like how long they've been around for. But I imagine there's not too many wineries that have had more vintages than you guys.
There will be a handful, but certainly we will be above average. Yeah. I'm not sure what the average age is either, but we're the second winery planted in Nelson. The other winery, the one that was before us, Seyfried's, they're still in production. So they must be coming up to, they'll be close to 50. The age of the there's a collection of wineries that are in that era, but the average age of the New Zealand winery would be much, much younger than 45.
So let's hear a little bit about your story. How did you go from booking a one-way flight to London to try to figure out the next chapter of your life to now being the international cheerleader, jack of all trades with your winery?
Yes. I'm quite stubborn. I think my mother would describe it as sassy, but I was very adamant that I didn't want to be in the wine industry because that's what mum and dad did. And I was from an era that was like, mum and dad in particular, they didn't do what their parents did. And so I didn't feel like I needed to do what my parents did. I spent my teens growing up on a farm, which wasn't really my jam at the time. Didn't realize how lucky I was. And then I went and studied in Wellington and I absolutely adored my degree. I did a degree in design and I sort of majored in photography, which I absolutely loved. And then I graduated and I was like, oh, cool. I have a photography degree now. So I'd really like to work for Vogue. So I'll buy a ticket to London and walk into the offices of Condé Nast and say, hey, I have a degree. So that's great. And I really look forward to full-time employment on a great salary that will let me live in central London with little to no experience. No, this is great. But I do remember I loved studying. I did love my degree, but I knew I wasn't going to do it again. So I remember I said to mum and dad, look, if you ever want to see me with the black hat and the gown and walking across the stage getting a certificate, this is your one-time opportunity. There will not be another graduation. So we flew up to Wellington together for graduation and mum and dad flew home to Nelson and I flew out on a one-way ticket to London, which was really exciting. And mum and dad were very supportive of it. When Neudorf came up for sale, was about the time they were looking at going on an OE, which is overseas experience, and which is very much what a lot of New Zealanders do, come either post high school or post university. But Tim and Jude had to make the decision to grow up because the right piece of land was available. So they never went on their OE. So they were very supportive of me going on mine, which was amazing. So I, yeah, booked this ticket to London and they were cool about that. And then about 24 hours, no, I think I was actually on the plane. Mum was suddenly like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that we've let her go to London by herself. And so she made this Facebook post that said, Rosie's on her way to London and she doesn't have any friends or money or a job. It was a really bad Facebook post.
But lots of confidence. Lots of confidence.
Absolutely unwavering confidence. And she really likes fashion and photography and food and wine and coffee and art. And like, if anybody in London can please go and have a coffee with my wayward daughter, we'd be so grateful. And a formidable young New Zealander named Melanie Brown was who was the sommelier at Providors by Peter Gordon in Marylebone. She had the largest New Zealand wine list in Europe at that restaurant, and she was in the process of launching a website called the New Zealand Cellar, which was specialising in boutique New Zealand wine, which is obviously Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc and big wines are widely available in the UK, but that sort of high boutique family-owned was really difficult to find. So she was launching this company, and she said, yeah, I'll have a coffee with Rose, no dramas. But we went and had a coffee together and she said, look, I can't give you a job, but if you ever need anything, like, here's my number, give me a ring. We got talking and we were like hours past. We were just having this absolute ball. And she said, well, I know a wine bar that I used to work at. I'll see if, you know, if they're looking for any staff. So she sort of hooked me up with a job and I was loving that. And I, you know, it was a wine bar in central London that had like 450 wines on. Four of which were from New Zealand. I sold more of those four New Zealand wines than anything else because I was very confident on those. She was launching this website. And so she sort of said, I know how to resize imagery. And so I can do your photos for you. And I started doing one day a week with her and we just got on like an absolute house on fire. By the end of it, about 3 months later, I was kind of looking for something else. I wanted, you know, I'd come to London to progress my career. And so I probably wasn't going to stay in hospo forever, but I loved my hospo job. And I think Mel could tell that if I went and got a 9-to-5, then I wouldn't be able to be working with her. So she found me a job. She gave me full-time work. Sometimes I picked her daughter up from school. Sometimes I resized imagery. Sometimes I went to wine tastings. I had the best job ever. I was 21 years old. And I had she was amazing. She took me under her wing. So any wine tasting that she got invited to, I got, you know, I was her plus one. We did a lot. The website was fantastic. We actually ended up opening a New Zealand wine bar in South London that we sort of crowdfunded for. And it was an incredible time. And then I suddenly realized that I was deeply immersed in the wine industry, but just 12,000 miles from home. So I rang Mum at one point and I said, look, I don't know when, but I'll come home. I'd love to work with you. So I ended up moving back to New Zealand 2016. And there was one of those like the moments where I had very little money and I bought Decanter magazine instead of Vogue magazine. And that was like a shocking turn of events. And then I moved back to New Zealand somewhat under duress. It was during Brexit and I couldn't extend my visa because I think I was like 23,
right,
having the best time of my life in London with my absolute dream job, working with someone who's now my best friend. She was the witness on my wedding certificate. She flew out. Like we talk all the time, Mel and I. So we became absolutely inseparable. And I was sort of forced back to New Zealand out with by something beyond my control, which I really struggled with. And I said to Mum, oh, well, I'll work for you for the summer. And, you know, then I might end up going to Sydney or like whatever. I'm going to be really whatever. I'm a woman of the world now. Mum said, yeah, that's awesome. What do you want to do? I said, I want to do social media and I want to, you know, look at the website and happy to do a bit of cellar door work and that kind of thing. And she was like, yeah, that's awesome. You should send me your CV. And I said, what do you mean I should send you my CV? And she said, well, you can't just have a job. You have to, this is the job. You have to apply for it. And I was furious. So I tidied up my CV and I sent it to Mum and I said, hi, Mum, applying for this job. Can you proofread for me and send it back? She came back. She said, yep, look, CV looks great. A few edits here, here and here. Good luck with the job application. So I made the edits and I sent it straight back. And I said, I'd like to apply for a role. So she said, I'll give you a trial period. And the rest is history, really. I worked with Mum for a couple of years full time. She was looking after all of our international sales markets or our sales in sales and marketing, I suppose. So I did a couple of years full time with her, and then I sort of slowly started looking after different markets. So like Sydney, Mum said, "Oh, do you want to go to Sydney on a trade trip?" I said, "Yeah, that sounds great." And London, I'd been working with quite closely when I was living in London, so that was an easy one. And then Mum sort of said, "I think I'm going to retire from this responsibility." And so I became the sales and marketing director, or the sales and marketing manager, probably 2019. They made me a director in 2020. And here I am.
Here you are. There's so many different things to unpack from that. I think the most interesting thing is you fell in love with New Zealand wine by leaving New Zealand and going to London.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to go in a bit of a different direction. This is a topic of conversation that only comes up every now and then, but it's the one of succession.
Mm-hmm. Because
we feel this in Niagara, the major wine region here in Ontario. And it's so mm-hmm. different where in Europe, where in so many parts of classical parts of Europe, old world, it's just going to get passed down generation to generation. That's just how it is. That's not how it is in North America. I imagine it might be the same where you are. Is there a succession problem going on in parts of New Zealand where there's these wonderful, beautiful wineries that have been making great wine for maybe decades, but maybe the next generation, they don't want to get involved? You're in a great spot with you're there now, and you're going to be the heart of it. Your mom's going to be the heart of it still for much longer. Are you the norm or are you the exception to the rule?
I think one of the reasons that I fell in love with the New Zealand wine industry from the other side of the world is that when I was homesick, I could drink wine and talk about things that I know deeply. And I grew up with all the kids of the New Zealand wine industry. We were running around making absolute havoc at Pinot conferences. And I'm still friends with those kids. Like, we, all of our parents were of the same era. And so there's a whole run of us that are all, I don't know, probably, there's a generation there that we all grew up together. So I found it really, I can talk about other New Zealand wine till the cows come home. I feel like I'm not just an advocate for Newdorf. I would happily cheerlead great New Zealand wine from any brand that I truly, truly loved anywhere in the world. And I think that's why I loved my job in London so much, because I got to talk about not just New Zealand, not just Newdorf, but New Zealand, the greatness of New Zealand wine in general. So there's a real, real joy and a privilege in that. I think the succession thing's interesting because, like I say, there was no expectation on me to step up or to be in the role. And a lot of people say, "Oh, you know, you're so lucky. Congratulations. You're so lucky that you've got your succession plan sorted." And we do, but only because I wanted the role.
Yeah.
If I hadn't wanted the role, I'm not sure what our exit strategy was. And that also comes with quite a lot of pressure, because I think I was like 25 when I said I'd really like the role. And so I didn't really consider that meant that Tim and Jude wouldn't be able to sell and therefore retire. And, you know, like, we're farmers. We're sitting on this beautiful piece of land, but it's still a farming kind of, I guess, cycle. And so it's only now, almost 10 years on, that I look back and go, "Oh my goodness, like, I made this flippant, like, oh yeah, I like the industry. I'm kind of good at the industry. Like, this will be great." Thankfully, I love my job. Nothing's changed and I still want to stick around. But I think I'd feel terrible if I was like 10 years in or even less and gone like, "Oh, actually, nah," because you've basically asked your parents not to sell the business at that point.
Right.
Which is, I think you don't realize the ginormity of that when you're in the moment. In terms of it being the norm or not, I've got lots of friends that are working in the industry. I know you had Paul Donaldson on last week, and so all of his brothers are involved, which is pretty incredible. You've got like the likes of Matt Sutherland at Dog Point. And I think, there is a huge second generation integration across New Zealand. You've got Rippon, Nick Mills, and their children are a bit younger, so who knows what they're going to do. But there certainly are, the question is bigger than you think it is at the time. I remember at the time being like, "Oh yeah, I'd love to be," you know, I didn't consider how big a question it is. But there will be a huge change in generational shift, and we're right on the brink of it now, because Mum and Dad were very early on and I'm sort of in this role now. But you've got the likes of, you know, a whole run of early pioneers who are of an age that they either want to retire or are stepping back and things like that, where the question really comes, what is the plan? Yeah.
And also just, you know, as you mentioned earlier, your mom and dad, the non-negotiables were all about climate change and biodynamic, least amount of intervention. And when you change, if there's a succession where it's not going down to the children, you wonder, will the next owners, will they continue that philosophy? Will they be the same level of stewards of the land as the last generation?
I think also, like, even if they are, I think I know that if we had gone on the market, I don't think I could live in Nelson. I think I'd find it too hard to watch somebody else. No, even if I agreed with every decision that they were making, it's somewhere, our family home is on the farm. So, you know, it's quite literally my backyard, which is very, very privileged and I'm really lucky. But there, I think I'd really struggle to watch somebody else run.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's like breaking up with someone, but you had to, but you love them. And then you see 100%. Them on Facebook with their new partner.
Yeah. I think I'd need to go away for a couple of years. But anyway, that's not our plan at the moment. I'm very, very good. Much happy and settled and staying. So.
All right, we'll go to a little bit simpler question. How was harvest? Okay. How was because I know it was a cool summer for a lot of parts mm-hmm. of New Zealand. Picking was later in certain parts, certainly down in Otago. How was it for you guys?
Yeah, it was beautiful. It's done and dusted. We were all in on the 2nd of April, which was great because that's my birthday. So it's very poignant. I'll remember that. 45 vintages, April 2nd. We love that. It was beautiful. It was there was a little bit of a gap in the middle. But we had an amazing picking crew, and it was quite fluid. So some days you can always tell how vintage is going depending on how much fruit's coming in at one time, because if it all needs to come in, then that's a lot of pressure on the winery. But there seemed to be, everyone is really happy. The fruit looked beautiful, pretty much on like where we would expect tonnage to be. And we were bang on for picking. I thought we were going to run later as well. But no, the ripeness was ready, and we started in the middle of March and 2.5 week pick, and we were done and dusted.
Good. All right. That's great. That's great to hear. Now the nerdy part of the interview for people that are dipping their toe into New Zealand wine. And, you know, and I say this 100 times, I understand that generalizations are tricky. They don't often apply because every vintage is different. But for you, is there anything you would tell people about the differences between Nelson Pinot or Chard versus Otago in the middle, you know, Ripon and Lake Wanaka? And again, I know there's no one paint by numbers for each region, but is there any little markers you look for?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Nelson is very famously long sunshine hours, but we don't have an intensity of heat. So central get much hotter than we would in the middle of summer. It's also a much drier climate. It's the only continental climate in New Zealand. Everywhere else would be considered maritime, particularly mm-hmm. Nelson. We have a huge piece of water in front of us called Tasman Bay. So Nelson, particularly in Pinot, I think Pinot is probably the wine that gives you, I think it's the most indicative of its climate, of those varietals. So for us, we see a lovely sort of savoury, quite deep forest floor, mushroomy, quite visceral element in our Pinots, which I think is that really like the afternoon sea breeze is like clockwork here. And so we know exactly what temperatures we're going to get over that long summer. So we do have a really long ripening time, which is beautiful because it gives everything this time to come up and ripen together. But we don't have that big burst of heat that you see in other parts of New Zealand.
For people, just your general portfolio. As I said many times when I was interviewing Todd, I think it was the 2016 of your Pinot, when your single vineyard Pinot that I fell in love with, tried it last summer and it amazed me. But for, if you were on a sales call and you were going to be talking about Neudorf, what would be the basic talking points for your white and red program?
So we are probably about 75% Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. Chardonnay is definitely the biggest skew. We make 4 different Chardonnays, and it's the wine that we are most well known for and has put us on the map, followed closely by Pinot Noir. And then we have a handful of aromatics, which are 2 Riesling, 2 Pinot Gris, an Albarino, and a Rosé, and they're absolutely delicious. I love those wines. They are bright and fresh and dry, and yeah, I think people always say to me, oh, what's your favorite? And I don't think that that's how wine works. I strongly believe that No one is trying to find the one wine that they're going to drink for the rest of their life. You're trying to find something that you're going to have with this particular dinner tonight, or you're going to have with this each on Sunday. And those two wines are probably wildly different. And so for me, I'm very proud of our portfolio, and I can say that because I didn't make it. But wine is, I am a huge, huge advocate for the fact that wine is there to be enjoyed. Nobody expects you to find one dish that you're going to eat for the rest of your life. Nobody expects you to find one wine. So I think that wine is one of those things that I want to break down the stigma around it being intimidating and scary, and people feel like they don't know enough. I don't know how my accounting software works, and I love that it does. People don't need to know how wine is made or where varietals are from. If they really enjoy it, that's awesome. And that's what the industry needs to do right now, is celebrate people who are drinking wine for enjoyment.
So then they don't need to know the pH levels of the Riesling they're drinking, is what you're saying.
I don't know the pH levels of the Riesling I'm drinking, and I've been in the industry for well over 15, 20 years.
Well, you mentioned just about breaking down, you know, some of the stereotypes, making it less intimidating. When we were hanging out with you, and I just had a fantastic tasting and tour, and again, just a gorgeous property. By the way, we only have 10 minutes left. Anyone listening, go and travel. Go to Nelson. You went from your Nelson. You're not that far from Neuerdorf. It's easy, easy flights. But one thing you were passionate about is to try to make sure people in the wine industry stop talking down to the customers.
Huge. Absolutely. Also, I think that there's a huge generation of people that aren't talking down to the customers, but I think there's been this stigma that people are terrified, they don't know enough. And I just, that to me is, it's just there to be enjoyed. It's not an exam. You know, most people are drinking wine because they are with people they really enjoy. Wine creates amazing conversation that makes you laugh, makes you cry when you're with the right people. I just think we're so lucky to work with a product that creates so many memories and brings so many people together, that I really wish that wine was not as intimidating. And I'm trying my very best, and I know I've got a lot of friends in this position all over the wine world who are talking about wine as something to be enjoyed and celebrated and not scared of.
Where would you like to see? Actually, I'll go with this one. The country that you are most surprised about that bought the most amount of your wine?
I think we've been in the UK for a very, very long time, which is something I'm quite pleased with, because we've been in there because of our Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, which is, they're obviously on the doorstep to Burgundy. So I always get very chuffed when we sell significant amounts of Chardonnay and Pinot into the UK. And I probably feel that same way through sort of like Belgium and Denmark and things. Spain, I love. The wine I'm most surprised about, Greece. This guy, Pavlos, has fallen in love with the wine industry, and he has started bringing wine in to Greece, and he's so passionate. And I get these photos of our titty titty Pinot Gris being drunk in Athens, and I just love it. Yeah, probably a heartwarming one.
That must be so cool, because your wine also represents you. It represents your family. It represents sacrifice and risk by your mom and dad to get started almost 50 years ago. So to see your name being enjoyed in Greece, that must be just on a very personal level, really rewarding.
It does represent us. And like, for example, a friend of mine got married in the UK last week and I couldn't be there, but they were drinking Neudorf. So I said, well, if I can't be there in body, at least I can be there in spirit and in bottle. It continues to take my breath away, be it in New Zealand, in the far reaches of anywhere. But when I go somewhere and I see Neudorf on a list, I still find it very grounding and very humbling, and not something that I don't think I ever will take for granted.
By the way, as an international cheerleader, have you had that moment selling your wine in New Zealand to stuffy old wine lover who believes that Chambertin is the end-all be-all of Pinot, and they've tried your wine and they've been surprised by how much they loved it?
I don't think it necessarily is anybody in particular, but when I think probably the biggest win for me is when someone says, oh no, I really don't like Chardonnay. And I say, well, can you just try one of these? And I always say it like that, like, it's not going to kill you. And if you don't like it, I'll give you a splash of rosé. You can rinse your mouth out. Like, this is, I think people who have such a strong opinion about Chardonnay because they had a terrible experience with it in the 80s or 90s, and so they haven't touched it since. And there's this whole big, bright, beautiful, amazing, like intelligent, sophisticated world of Chardonnay out there. And I'm like, okay, cool. I understand you don't like it. Please just try this. And it's not the stuffy drinker. It's just somebody that's so comfortable in what they know, which I totally appreciate. But when you see their eyes open and they just have this spark of like, oh, I really like that. And you know, you've just opened this door of Chardonnay to them. That for me is such a win.
That's cool. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, I never liked tomatoes. And then you try a fresh one day. And you're like, oh, I guess I like tomatoes. It's
100%.
The same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Rosie, as we end this, any advice you would give to people that are thinking of traveling to New Zealand and part of the reason for their trip is for wine?
Take your time, give yourself an extra week than what you think you need. Our roads are long and windy, and we'd much rather you leave New Zealand safe and in one piece. So give yourself lots of time. The drives here are amazing. I've just done a big trip around the North Island and I love driving here. So take your time to be able to stop and have a coffee at the cute little coffee store in the back blocks of nowhere, because to me, it's one of those absolute magical treats about this country.
It really is. We loved our two and a half weeks traveling around just the South Island. Rosie, really appreciate this. I recommend anyone, if you're in Nelson, go to Neudorf. It's a beautiful spot to taste wine. The staff is great, especially your mom. And just thanks again for coming on the pod, and wish you and your family nothing but the best.
Thank you so much, Matthew. I so appreciate being here.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on iTunes and Apple and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.